Good morning, everybody. I'd like to welcome everyone to the December the 14th, 2023 Savannah Zoning Board of Appeals meeting. This is a quasi-judicial proceeding. All those wishing to give testimony during these proceedings will please sign in. Witnesses will be sworn in prior to giving testimony. All proceedings of the Savannah Zoning Board of Appeals are recorded. Decisions of ZBA are final. Challenges to the decisions of this board must be filed through the Superior Court of Chatham County. I'd like to ask you if you have cell phones or noise-making devices, if you'll silence them at this time, please. And stand and join me for the Pledge of Allegiance and the prayer. Father, we just thank you for this day to come together and do the business of this city. Lord, I thank you for the privilege of living here. Thank you for your presence in this meeting. I ask you, Lord, to give us wisdom today to make right decisions. And Father, I just ask your blessings on the marriages and families of Chatham County, strengthen them and keep them well. In Jesus' name, amen. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Okay, we have a item requested to be removed from the final agenda. That's the ADU minimum lot area variance for 114 East 55th Street, 23-005664. Do I hear a motion to remove this from final agenda?
Motion to remove.
Mr. Plunk has made a motion to remove this item from final agenda. Is there a second?
Second.
All right, seconded by Mr. Condon. Mrs. Jarrett, how do you vote?
Yes.
Mr. Plunk?
Yes.
Mr. Condon?
Yes.
Mr. Turner?
Yes.
All right, the motion passes, and we will remove this from the final agenda. Next, we have the approval of the minutes from the November 30th meeting. Do I hear a motion to approve the minutes?
So moved.
Mr. Plunk's made a motion to approve the minutes from the November 30th meeting. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Mr. Turner. Mrs. Jarrett, how do you vote?
Yes.
Mr. Plunk?
Yes.
Mr. Condon?
Yes.
Mr. Turner?
Yes.
All right. Motion passes and the minutes are approved. All right. Next, we're going to have a motion to approve the final agenda as you see it before you. You'll check that out and decide if you like it like it is. We'll keep it.
Motion to approve the final agenda.
Okay. Mr. Plunk has made a motion to approve the final agenda as you see it before you. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Mr. Turner. Mrs. Jarrett, how do you vote?
Yes.
Mr. Plunk?
Yes.
Mr. Condon?
Yes.
And Mr. Turner?
Yes.
All right. Motion passes and the agenda is approved. If you're going to be speaking or giving testimony here today, would you please stand? Everyone who's going to speak or give any testimony, we're going to swear in. All right, if you will, please raise your right hand and repeat after me. I do solemnly swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. So help me God. Thank you. All right, under old business.
I have to step out for this item. I have a conflict.
Mr. Condon is going to recuse himself because he has a conflict of interest on this item. This is the parking variance for 1401 Paulson Street, 23-005664.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the board. Edward Morrow, Director of Development Services. The petition in front of you is a request to, in essence, eliminate the off-street parking requirement for an existing historic structure at 1401 Paulson Street. This building is identified as the laundry building, and historically it was used as an actual laundromat. And the petitioner in this case brought the parcel forward for rezoning to traditional commercial one in January of 2023 for the purpose of establishing a microbrewery, neighborhood grocer, and restaurant at this location. You can see a photo of the parcel here historically showing, from the Sanborn map. This is a Sanborn map snip, that shows that the existing structure was right here. And at the rear, there was an existing building, that no longer exists. And so in essence, you're just left with this portion that fronted on Paulson Street. Again, the TC1 zoning was requested specifically for the purpose of establishing the microbrewery, which, the owner actually, because of their state license for as a microbrewer, they're required to only open microbreweries. They cannot have other products. In essence, they're only allowed to sell what it is that they produce. They cannot distill spirits. They cannot be retailers of other alcoholic beverages. So that particular use was requested and required the TC1 zoning district. At the time of this hearing, the petitioner was questioned with specific regard to the off-street parking requirement. That was in debate because the microbrewery use did not have a defined parking requirement. And so later it was determined in working with the city's planning urban design department that I believe 8 spaces were required. There's been a subsequent zoning certification letter to determine that something like 13 off-street parking spaces are grandfathered, in essence, because this structure was built without parking at that time. And so in order to make up the difference for the more intense use that is requested, 13 off-street spaces are required at present. And so the petitioner's request is to eliminate this off-street parking, which also kind of comes in conjunction with this intent to utilize a benefit within the current zoning that permits elimination of off-street spaces for additional bicycle and moped spaces. At present, we do have some concerns as to whether or not there's adequate space to accommodate these, but nonetheless, there is that commitment on the part of the petitioner, and that's a relevant aspect within this request. You can see here that the subject parcel is kind of an elongated parcel. It has a long shape, a long narrow shape, but it's vacant, and the foundation of the old building is still there. Again, at the time of the petition, the petitioner stated that the rear of the parcel was vacant, and the implication was that the off-street parking would go at the rear of the existing building. No site plan was submitted to substantiate that, but that was the assertion at the time. So, in essence, the structure itself contains 3,758 square feet internally. There's an upstairs and a downstairs to it. With that, the staff does recommend denial of the request in favor of a longer-term parking solution for this area. It is reasonable to anticipate that the rest of this parcel is going to be developed in a commercial manner, and so at that time, I would assume that an additional parking variance is going to be requested, in essence, to make up the difference for that parking as well. And so in this instance, a parking variance is probably not the best solution to this issue. An interim solution involving parking on the parcel and then seeking to work with the city to develop a parking solution is probably better at this juncture. With that, I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Morrow. Any questions for staff? Okay. Would someone, would a petitioner please come forward?
So sorry, the petitioner, Ms. Massey, is present online.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the board. For the record, Josh Yellen here today representing Liz Massey from Two Tides Brewing Company. As Mr. Morrow mentioned, we were supposed to be heard last month. We got continued, so travel plans for the holidays interfered, but we did want to make sure that she was on the line, and we do have many of her coworkers and supporters here in attendance as well to speak on this application. So I did just want to bring up a little context for the site, because I think the context and location of this proposed restaurant is very important, along with the history of the site and the rezoning that took place. So as you can see on this picture, this is the actual building in question. It is a laundry facility that was built on the corner of Anderson and Paulson Streets. At the time, and I think what's important to mention, is that this entire area was a commercial corridor. The building in the front is the one in question. This was a laundry facility. This was a mattress factory. These were offices. These are commercial uses. This, I believe, was the rail depot for the transit facility in the area. Then we have additional commercial uses here. Even today, if you walk down this area, they are all either commercial uses or vacant buildings, because the zoning and the area poses limitations on each and every user that comes in. To alleviate some of those concerns, what we did back in January was we did rezone this property to TC1 and obtain the special use approval in order to operate the microbrewery. That was fully vetted by MPC, vetted by City Council, and it was approved. There was enthusiastic support for this project, as being a great benefit for the neighborhood, as it would be neighborhood oriented. The intent is for it to be a walkable project for people to ride their bikes there, to be a true benefit for the community and the surrounding areas. And what's unique about the parking variance that we are requesting is that if we were located just a few blocks over across East Broad, we would not be here today asking for a parking variance. Once you cross East Broad, sites below 3,000 square feet are parking exempt. By virtue of our location here, we do have to comply with the parking requirements. And as Mr. Morrow mentioned, the new zoning letter that we obtained is really treating this as a restaurant, which frankly requires a lot of parking at one space per 100 square feet, which is one of the highest parking requirements, unfortunately, for any use within the city of Savannah, despite the commitment in this area to be a neighborhood-friendly development. But by virtue of our location, here we are. And unfortunately, I see this time and time again with many projects here in the city of Savannah, and many applicants come and ask me for assistance, and they say, why hasn't the Waters Corridor taken off? Why hasn't the east side gotten more restaurants? Why hasn't the west side gotten more restaurants? What's wrong with the south side locations? The problem in each and every instance is parking. Parking is expensive to build. It is hard to obtain, and it often kills projects. And we are very frequently here before you asking for variances for parking, particularly here with a purpose-built commercial site that was built without parking. We are asking to eliminate parking so that a new user can come in and actually put this building to use. Liz has done a great job, as she did with the prior rezoning petition, in terms of neighborhood support. She's housed multiple open houses on site, has met with neighbors, has posted on Facebook, has posted on Instagram, and overwhelmingly, there was a tremendous amount of support for this project. We understand the concerns of ZBA that maybe we should be looking at the big picture of this area. Unfortunately, we have a lease for this project. We need to start our construction. We need to start paying rent. We would be happy to support any future endeavor for all of the adjacent parcels. We believe that's important for this area, but we don't believe that we should be held up if that going forward is going to be inevitable. We are happy to participate in that, but we need to get our plans moving and rolling. We've been at this for now nearly a year. And like I said, there's enthusiastic support for this parking variance. As Mr. Morrow also mentioned, the intent is also to maximize the bicycle parking and moped parking on site. We truly want this to be a neighborhood friendly business. And so we would respectfully request that you approve of today's variance to exempt us from the parking requirement because we do not have space on site. We have made tremendous efforts to locate alternative parking in the vicinity. We cannot find anyone who is willing to lease to us. And so we are here today as our last chance to get this parking variance so this great project can move forward. And we do respectfully request that you approve of today's variance to exempt the 13 spaces for this project. And I'm happy to answer any questions that you may have, but I know there's quite a few people here to speak in support of the project. And I know that Ms. Massey is on the line as well. So thank you all for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Yellen. Are there any questions for Mr. Yellen before Mrs. Massey speaks? Go ahead, Ms. Punk.
I believe Mr. Morrow mentioned that when you initially applied back in January or February, he said you had said that there was going to be parking provided on the vacant part of the lot, and then I guess plans changed. Can you speak to, you know, what changed between now and then and why you can't use that as originally was planned?
No, so the rear parcel, as you can see from this aerial, is currently vacant. There was some initial conversations as to whether that could be used. The current plan is for that site to also be redeveloped. And so ultimately, and to the point made, yes, maybe it is possible for a temporary solution, but all that's going to do is kick us down the road when we have to come back in 6 months to come ask for the exact same variance. So I don't like temporary solutions when we're trying to operate a small business. It just makes it more costly and gives them less assurance that they can actually operate.
And just to clarify as a follow-up, the petitioner owns this entire portion?
The applicant is only leasing to approximately where I'm showing.
Right.
The rest, it's under same ownership, but we don't control that site.
Okay.
Understood. Thank you. Any other questions for Mr. Yellen?
Thank you.
Mrs. Massey, are you online?
Yes, sir, I am.
You have anything you'd like to say?
The only thing at this time, I mean, Josh did a great job of, you know, saying everything that I would. But just to clarify too, the reason Michael Condon is not in the room right now is because he owns the entire property. And that lot is actually broken up into individual PIN numbers or lot numbers as well. And so as far as my project is concerned, that's why, you know, I don't have access to the rest of that property. I'm only leasing the building that we've been discussing so far. And from my understanding too, the reason this was, I think there was a lot of assumptions made when we went in front of zoning originally too, where we never really even fully discussed the use of that back lot because, like I said, I'm not leasing that lot. And so I think a lot of assumptions were made that I could use that lot without actually discussing it as a group. So that's why we're here now, just to formally, wrap up everything that we've been discussing.
Okay, thank you. Are there any questions for Mrs. Massey? All right. Go ahead.
Mr. Morrow, could you tell me, it seems to me that when we approved this before, it was with the understanding that the property behind the laundromat would be used for parking. Was that just an assumption on our parts that we...
So in reviewing the video from that particular day, I was not employed here at the time.
I understand.
There was a specific question asked by Mr. Melder as to what the plan was for parking. And at that time, Mr. Yellen stated, among another a number of things, that the rear of the parcel is vacant. I think that's the only assumption that was made, that he did not explicitly state that is where parking will occur. But I will say that within the scope of his comments to that question was the rear of the parcel is vacant.
At that point in time, were they able to park what they needed to park given the conditions that they had?
So obviously a site plan would have been needed to actually delineate.
Doing zoning.
Right. So again, with different staff, I think we have kind of different approaches and a site plan was not a part of that. Which is something that I think would have alleviated a lot of the reason why we're here today. It would have made it very clear. At that time, I think the expectation was that the few spaces that would have been required could have easily been accommodated on that section of the parcel. I do believe that was likely the assumption.
The zoning that's in place allows for the microbrewery.
Yes, ma'am.
And the city decided that the microbrewery use was similar to a restaurant use. And that's where we came up with the 13 required parking spaces. Is that?
So based on the combination of uses that were requested in association with that, in the original hearing, there was the restaurant use, and the, there was another, a grocer. Those are things that would have been permitted under the zoning. So the special use was specifically for this add-on of a microbrewery. In order to permit the particular alcohol sales that would occur on this site, they had to have a special use for the purpose of allowing those alcohol sales.
So we still have the alcohol sales and the grocery and the restaurant.
That's correct.
Thank you.
I'm a little confused. The microbrewery is the restaurant, correct?
Yes.
And the microbrewery, I'm a little ignorant. Is this a place where you go buy some beer and take it home, or do you drink it while you're there?
So I think that because there is a grocery retail component to this, the expectation is that there would be, in addition to products that are brewed by the petitioner, there would also be, I think, eggs and bread that were mentioned in the course of that hearing. So,
do you consume it on the premises, or do you take it home and consume it?
Both.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
Sorry. And I think one of the points to mention to Mr. Merriman's question, when we went through to City Council, we are only having two beers on site. That's what we were committed to. It was two products only that were going to be made at this facility. As was mentioned, there's some nuance from the state law that because they own Two Tides Brewing Company, they cannot legally operate a restaurant. Because that's considered a different license classification in the eyes of the state. You can have a microbrewery that serves food, which is what this is. Functionally, yes, it's a restaurant, but for licensing purposes, we are a microbrewery with only two beers. No outside products, no other people's beers, no hard liquor, no wine, just the beers that they make. And to Ms. Jarrett's question about the parking on site, I might get my timeline confused, but when we were going through city council process, we were still working with John and the city to finalize the initial zoning letter as to how do we treat this use. Is it treated as a microbrewery, which did not have a defined parking requirement under the ordinance? Do we treat it as a restaurant? Since that time, our numbers and the square footage have changed. The microbrewery component is different now than it was when we initially went through MPC. And so the parking requirement has changed since that date.
And what way has it changed?
It's gone up. I think the restaurant seating has increased. And it's gone up by, I think the number is actually, John, do you know, I think the number might have been roughly the same.
So the original analysis was that the parking requirement at the time of the rezoning was 8 parking spaces, and that's not including any credits for bicycle or motorcycle moped spaces. Currently, the analysis is 16 spaces, and again, not including any credit for motorcycle or bicycle parking.
Okay. The 13 spaces that were in the report
is with the 20%.
With the idea that bicycles and mopeds would be.
Yes, ma'am.
My reason for asking my question was wanting to kind of put together whether it's going to be somebody stopping, grabbing something and leaving, or, you know, being there for a while, drinking 2 beers and having something to eat.
Right. No, the intent is going to be a full service restaurant.
I understand.
Yes.
A full service restaurant. People will come in, have dinner there.
Yes.
Or lunch. Or-
yes. It's a diner. Yes, ma'am.
I have a question.
Go ahead.
For Mr. Yellen or possibly Liz. Has there been any survey of the parking situation there on Paulson or Vine, you know, to see how many cars are on the road right now with, you know, at different hours of the day? Has that been looked into at all?
I have not. Liz, can you speak to what you've seen from your observations?
Yes, there has not been a formal survey done from the city, but I went using the zoning map through the city and the measurement tool. I was able to measure that there's over 72 unused spaces at any given time along that 4-block corridor that Josh outlined in the beginning, and that's with curb setbacks as well. You do see once you get past Vine Street, you know, there's one residential home there, and then there's a few residential homes as you continue south down Vine Street. So I didn't even look at those streets because I didn't want to include residential or just parking that touched residential areas at all in that number. I drive by this building 4 times or more every single day, and every single time there's ample available parking, mainly along that Paulson Street corridor and then further south down Vine Street. Like I said, not including the streets that line the residential areas.
Right. So you said 72 spots, and that's within, I mean, how many feet within would you say? What would you define as that core area?
So when I was trying to, I just did, you know, this is all my own research. I did roughly 18 feet per parking space, and then I allotted for a few feet off of the curb as well. So that was just me getting a rough measurement, but those are the streets directly lining the building where, so Vine Street, Paulson, and then when you go to, you know, past 31st Street, lining where there's the other vacant building as well that's falling right down. That's commercial. Also lining the lot that's owned by Georgia Power right now where nothing can ever go there because there's electric equipment in the ground. So no one's ever going to be parking there for anything as far as I understand. And there's open parking on that street as well. From what I've seen, all of the residents park directly in front of their homes. So, you know, the homes that are on 31st Street, 32nd Street, I never see anyone parking their car on Paulson Street and then walking to their home on 32nd. I will say where I do see residents parking is on Vine Street, across from that Georgia Power lot.
So the only residential unit on either Vine or Paulson by this is this 733 that's across the street?
This building.
Right. Right. Yeah.
And there's actually a lot in between it. That's
okay.
Separate and vacant.
Okay.
This is commercial. This is commercial and this is commercial. So this is entirely commercial surrounding the site, which is one of the big points when we went through the rezoning, but this was all.
Thank you. That answers my area.
Mr. Yellen, when we originally approved this, can you talk to me about your understanding of what parking was available?
At the time, we thought that we were going to be parking compliant. Obviously, that has changed, which is why we need the variance. I don't think it was an intent to mislead and say that everything would be worked out. But at the time that we went through it, we thought that either through the zoning verification and grandfathered use spaces or existing sites that we would be able to reduce that to zero. As the circumstances have changed and as the plans for the building have changed, obviously our parking has increased materially.
But we don't have the existing 8 spaces that were originally proposed.
No, so we are coming in for the full exemption for this property. I still believe that based upon the conversations that Liz has had with the neighborhood outreach for this particular project, that there has been tremendous support.
I understand. I think it's a great project, but I think it's a slippery slope.
Understood. And from our standpoint, as we mentioned, if we were 3 blocks over, if we were in the mid-city district, every use under 3,000 square feet is exempt from parking. I don't think that the concerns that are over in that district between residents and commercial businesses are causing problems in a way that they would here. I think it's roughly a similar situation where we should be encouraging the small neighborhood friendly businesses because the parking does put a serious burden on them to be feasible and for them to stay in operation. And so what we are asking is to be treated similarly to other businesses within the mid-city district, within the Victorian district, and within downtown who are not required to meet these frankly very onerous parking demands.
Thank you, sir. Any more questions?
Quick question. Do we know the anticipated hours that the restaurant will be open?
The hours so this was a point of debate at the MPC when we went through it. Their intent was to have a 24-hour diner, which was it's not permitted because they have an alcohol license. I can let Liz, did y'all ever sign off on your hours of operation? Because we went and there were limitations on the hours proposed by MPC staff. When we went to MPC, I want to say the MPC board and city council eliminated those hours saying because in essence, a restaurant without an alcohol license can be open 24 hours a day. Why should a restaurant with an alcohol license be treated differently? And so I believe that they are technically permitted to stay open until 3 a.m. I'm not sure if that's the intent, but there were no limitations imposed because that would not have been required if they didn't have the microbrewing aspect.
Any more questions? Mrs. Massey, do you have anything else you want to say?
No, at this time, I think Josh is doing a great job saying exactly everything I would. I will say we did, just to clarify what Josh just said with the alcohol sales, our plan is to be open 7 days a week because this project has been delayed significantly. There's still some work to be done in determining exact hours. However, the goal is to be open 24 hours Friday through Sunday. However, with working with MPC and City Council originally, even though the restaurant can be open 24 hours, there is a limit on when we are allowed to serve alcohol. So I believe we worked out where we cannot serve any alcohol past 1 a.m. Until 7 a.m. the next day. And so we agreed, we all worked together just to figure out how, we could work together with alcohol sales to make sure, we're just fitting in with the neighborhood and the demographic that's already there.
Okay.
I'm sorry. I just wanted to add a point of clarification for the record. Traffic engineering, simply because they have taken the time to weigh in, disagrees with the assessment of available on-street parking. So I just want to say that number 72 is not reflective of any of the comments I received from traffic engineering. Also, the presence of Savannah Classical Academy being less than 300 feet to the west, and the parent queuing at particular times of day were concerns that were noted. So again, just a point of clarification for the record.
Does traffic and engineering have their own number that they wanted to provide?
Not a specific number, but I'll just say that the understanding they have is that the availability of on-street parking is not as it does not seem to be as available as
they would just say less than 72, but
absolutely less than 72.
But they don't have anything they're basing that on or any numbers to disagree with it about.
So there are identified areas where on-street parking is available. So on-street parking availability is reflected in the width of the street itself. So in essence, once you begin to park cars on the street, you reduce the drive aisle width. And so you'd have to have at least 26 feet for a two-way street period. Once you start to park cars on that, you reduce the actual drive aisle width. And so their metrics are in essence based on those street widths. There are identified areas where they said on-street parking is actually prohibited. And so I believe that some of the areas that are included in that 72 include areas where traffic engineering would say on-street parking is not permitted.
Can I ask Ms. Massey, since it seems like she spends the most time here, to respond to the point about parent queuing for the Savannah Classical Academy, and, you know, do they queue on Vine Street or Paulson, and how would that affect in her view, since she said she's there four times a day?
Currently, I have not seen any queues directly around the laundry building. I do know through some of my neighborhood outreach, some of the residents that live closer to the Vine Street and 32nd Street side, Vine Street and even 33rd, I know that they do experience some queuing issues. I will say, while I believe that that is definitely impacts the neighborhood, I don't know why my business has to be limited by something another established business like a school is doing, because it seems like the school is abusing the parking situation as well, because I don't know. I know that those parents don't have anywhere else to go, but I don't know why the poor handling of pickup for school should affect my business.
Thank you, Ms. Massey.
Okay.
Yeah.
Are there any more questions before we go to public comment?
I mean, I will also say, just, you know, for more of just a formal statement too, at 3 p.m., I don't see any increase in traffic on our side of the street as well. And I will say, just from a restaurant perspective too, 3 p.m. is one of the slowest times in the restaurant industry. It's between lunch and dinner. I can't imagine we would have any increase in traffic that would impact this at all at 3 p.m. any day of the week.
But you would have employees park during that time?
We would, but also very limited because it's between lunch and dinner rush.
Thank you.
Okay. If any members of the public would like to speak concerning the petition, sir, you can come first. When you come up, please state your name for the record.
Yes. Good morning, y'all. My name is Greg Hornack. I've lived in Savannah for 14 years. I'm a business owner of the last 6 years here. I work with Liz and Jonathan quite a bit at Two Tides, and am here to support their endeavor as also someone who lives right on Siler Street, about seven blocks away from where this property is. It's also right on my commute home from where I work down in Eastern Wharf. I bike every day. I've biked every day that I've lived in Savannah, for 14 years, never owned a car. And we'll be biking to this diner. I think that it's very important to keep in mind, the Vision Zero plan, keeping less cars on the roads as a matter of course means making accepting variances to, restrictions that would create conditions for more cars to need to be on the roads. In this way, this is a walkable, bikeable place. They're able to facilitate something that is much more community focused as opposed to a lot of the upmarket restaurants that we have. This one is one that is actually for the community. People can come in and eat regularly. And I think that by keeping the parking and construction costs to a minimum, they will be better able to do that.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Please raise your hand if you'd like to speak. All right, sir, come on.
Hey, good morning. My name is Patrick Wilver. I live at 902 East 33rd on the corner of 33rd and Harmon. I'm very excited about this project. I hope that you will approve the variance. I do plan to walk to this location. I remember about a year ago when this got announced, I was very excited that finally there would be a walkable establishment in my neighborhood that I could go to. So I'm pretty disappointed that we're even here right now having this conversation. I, you know, walk down Paulson and Vine Street quite frequently. There are some questions about the parking. So, you know, I've got a dog. We go on a lot of walks. I never see any parking issues on Vine Street. The queue for the school, mostly I see on LeGrand and Atlantic Avenue, right around 3 o'clock. So I usually don't see too much problem, around the time that, you know, you guys are talking about on Vine Street. So I think this should absolutely, be approved. And I also wanted to talk a little bit, Mr. Yellen brought it up, about what the city hopes to accomplish along the Waters Ave corridor in general with the redevelopment. I know the city just spent, I think it was $6.1 million in SPLOST funds, so that's my taxpayer money, on the streetscape project. But there's no parking anywhere on Waters Avenue, is there? There's no street parking, right? So if we're going to try to encourage businesses to move to this area, walkable businesses that people like me who live in a neighborhood can go to and frequent, and buy things that we need, then we're going to have to kind of let go of some of these parking requirements. I think they're overly burdensome. They're unnecessary, considering how many of us live in the area and want to be able to walk to places. So I think you guys should approve this variance. I want this restaurant to open ASAP. I'm fully in support. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Sir, come on.
Good morning. My name is Jason Combs. I am currently the president of the Thomas Square Neighborhood Association. I also have master's degrees in city planning and urban design, where I was at school with Mr. Morrow right here. We have a couple of disagreements about this, but I certainly respect his work. But what I want to talk to first that I can speak most directly about is the value of Liz Massey as a business person in the Thomas Square neighborhood. She is one of the people that makes Starland what it is, that makes it an incredible place, along with her business, Two Tides. I know you can't approve something just because of someone's personal qualifications, but if you could, Liz would be the person to do it for. She's an amazing person. I'm sure she'll have an amazing business just like she does at Starland. Second of all, I'm actually trying to help the Midtown Neighborhood Association reorganize, and they have not gotten that done yet. They're not official with the city, but if they were, I think they would be here supporting this as well, as this is just inside their boundary. As far as the parking issue, you know, I think that Liz did a good job in counting those parking spaces, and we don't have a counter number. And I also like to say that, you know, given that there is that school there, some congestion due to more on-street parking is actually a good thing, because that is natural traffic pacification, makes people go slower when you cut down on that drive width of some of these streets. So you should be looking for a way to actually increase more people parking on street in this area. That'll make it safer for people coming to and from that school. Lastly, I think, you know, one thing that Edward alluded to was wanting to make a larger neighborhood plan for this area that might take parking into account and give similar restrictions or lack of restrictions, just like Midtown and downtown. But that is a project without a timeline. And so we can't really ask this business that needs to get open to wait on that when there is no timeline for that project, which is valuable and should be done. And I will certainly support Edward in doing that, both for here and any other neighborhood. But for right now, the best solution is to give this variance to help this business move forward. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Hi, my name is Shelby Bach. I'm a resident of the Midtown neighborhood on 40th Street. I'm also an avid urbanist. I've worked in historic preservation in Atlanta, Charleston, and hope to work in it in Savannah. I live my life in a 4-mile radius here, and I rarely patronize businesses that I can't walk or bike to. I think a lot of the supporters of this project can probably say the same. As mentioned by the last person, these business owners have been instrumental in the growth of the Starling District in recent years. The east side of Savannah has yet to reap the same kind of development enjoyed by that district, largely because of restrictive zoning. I'm not sure if we would have the same vibrant downtown and Starland district that we had if we required all of these businesses to have this level of on-street parking. I'm sure in all your experience, you can recognize that walkable and accessible neighborhoods don't just appear. They're created when we intentionally invest in creative solutions to provide resources like restaurants and small grocery, which is currently virtually unavailable in this area. It takes one transformative project to start the renewal of a neighborhood, and I fear that if this exception isn't approved, then this corridor of Savannah will continue to be largely dormant. Thank you.
Thank you. Ma'am.
Good morning. Y'all would probably be very interested in talking to me because I am the neighbor that's directly across from the laundromat at 1413 Vine Street. So I can attest daily to everything as far as the inconveniences and the positive and the negatives of overall everything. First off, on a personal note, Savannah Classical is a complete nuisance to our area with parking and with not having any respect for us as neighbors. One thing I can say about Michael is that he personally has come and talked to all of us about anything that can possibly inconvenience us. If he was bringing anything in, any type of build, you know, taking anything down from the building, cutting down any trees, that entire area. I talk a lot with Dietrich, our alderman. My husband and I have been complaining. We've been there for 8 years. We've been complaining continuously about graffiti, negative activity. We had some theft issues, things such as that, because that area had a whole, from it being abandoned, it was drawing the wrong type of attention. Second of all, that area of the laundromat, how they're saying that back part was, everything was totally secluded with horrible brushing and trees and branches, and nobody was cleaning it up. Michael came in, got all of that cut and cleaned down. No one can dump their trash and garbage, their furniture, their refrigerator, everything that we as citizens were having to do, although we pay our taxpayer money. We were having to move that so my children didn't have to sit there and look at that. I can't even take family photos towards that direction because I had a whole horrible background. All my family photos are always versus 1413 Vine, my yellow house is right there because it was a horrible scenic route. The parking, as far as with Savannah Classical, we had to petition between Mayor Johnson, City Council, Dietrich, the traffic committee, because they were coming all into our whole entire area. We as residents couldn't even get to our homes between the hours of about 2:15 to 3:15 because they had the whole entire area. And even now, the only reason they're not directly in front of my street is because my husband and I petitioned so much. But unfortunately, my other neighbors on the other side of Vine Street, the traffic goes all the way down Vine. It turns off and takes up the whole entire Paulson. You can't even drive through that. So it's kind of unfair that we want to sit here and say that we want to make rules for somebody who's bringing something positive into the neighborhood when Savannah Classical doesn't even respect the rules themselves. As far as graffiti, the minute that they put graffiti up, they come in and they clean it up. There's no more graffiti. They just did it last night. I promise y'all within 48 hours, they'll have it back down again. It's making people want to leave the area that have not been positive because they see something good coming. If we don't get this area, it's going to deter other people from wanting to come because it's like, why would I put all my money and investment into something and then turn around and once I get before city council or boards or anything, I get told no. Parking, I have a 18-wheeler, which being that that's a commercial area, it would be allowed. That's great for my husband and my family and us being able to provide. I also have three vehicles. All of my vehicles are able to park right there. The whole entire stretch in front of the drawing is open. No one parks there. If somebody wants to visit someone across the street, sometimes they'll park there, but all of that is open. So they're not going to be inconveniencing anything. No one ever parks at the warehouse, but maybe once every day or two. So all of that area is always open. The only time there is any traffic issues is with Savannah Classical. And like I said, us neighbors, we've been complaining about it for years. Dietrich's been working with us to try to get something, but like they said, where else are they supposed to go? So why should Savannah Classical be excluded? But yet, this lady who's coming in and trying to bring something positive into the, you know, neighborhood, she gets told she has to, you know, go with the rules. They're impeding traffic every day. They don't get any tickets. And that's, you know, my husband would have came and spoke as well, but unfortunately he just had a procedure yesterday, but.
Thank you very much, ma'am. Is there anyone else? No, just, well, come on.
Hello, my name is Clinton Edminster, and I'm also here in support of this project. Just a couple things to say. Personally, I believe off-street parking requirements anywhere in this country are a threat to national security. I'm happy to buy any of you guys a drink, and I'll show you my logic on that. I think it's actually a pretty good point. Specifically with this project, though, what I'm interested in is and part of the argument made in the documents I've found online was I'm really excited to see that they're preserving the extra space on that lot for future development. I think actually that is the best possible outcome that we could hope for this area. I've been involved in the Starland District. I'm currently the owner of a cafe over on Waters Avenue. And I spend a lot of time talking with people throughout the city about how do we make small business more affordable and more accessible for people who want to start a business here in Savannah. The best way to do it is to create multiple, many, many hotspots that are interesting places that have aspects of walkability, small parcels where people can start a business for a really, you know, a very affordable amount, and it isn't a huge financial risk for them to engage in. This area, Waters Avenue area, the Starland District, Pennsylvania Avenue, Habersham Village, these are all places that we should really be encouraging densification, gentle densification, projects like this. I do support this project. And if in the future other parking variances are looked for parcels around here, I'll be right back up here promoting and encouraging those parking variances as well. And also, if I can turn to the audience as well, and this is part of my, you know, public comment to you guys.
Address the chair, please.
I will address, absolutely, but I will just say I'm really glad to see so much support from everybody here for projects like this. As you guys probably know, everybody in this room, we've got a lot of challenges in terms of housing and transportation throughout not just this county and the city, but really the region. And I think trying to figure out more ways for more people to get involved in projects like this to support gentle densification and infill, as well as affordable housing initiatives throughout really the whole area is a really good thing. I'm really encouraged to see everybody here. I'm really encouraged to see you guys so involved as you are. And the only other thing I would say is that with the Waters Cafe has now been open 9 months. And I believe it was last December that I was here in front of you guys for a variance myself of 7 parking spaces. And I'll let you guys know that it's worked out fabulously. We've had tremendous buy-in from the neighborhood. Our parking lot is full and people park where they need to park. We've communicated really well with all of the neighbors in the area, and nobody has confronted us about any problems whatsoever. We have an incredible amount of walk-up or bike-up traffic at the cafe, and I would imagine that this diner will see the same, if not more, of a combination of transportation to that spot. Very much encourage you to vote yes on this, and thank you.
Thank you. Ma'am, please come forward.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Erica Leung, and I'm actually a neighbor. I live on the corner of Paulson and 32nd. I just wanted to come up and voice my support for this project. I'm obviously a bit of a younger person, and I've moved to downtown Savannah for the reason of, you know, being able to walk everywhere and visit, you know, many up-and-coming businesses and things like that. From my point of view as a neighbor and as someone who would, you know, hopefully be visiting this microbrewery, I would obviously walk because I'm close, but I also understand that because this is a microbrewery, people are likely going to leave their cars behind. I don't see many people who would, you know, think beforehand and say, oh, I'm going to drive to this microbrewery and have a couple beers and drive back home. I see people, you know, carpooling, taking Ubers, taking Lyfts, biking, or just walking to the area. I think that is something to, you know, note in that aspect. But I do hope that more businesses can come to the neighborhood so that, you know, the neighborhood can continue to grow and also attract much of the younger crowd. I think we have to think long term, and in order for, you know, the community to grow, in order to encourage people to move downtown and to move to these up and coming areas, we need to have these types of businesses to attract the right type of people. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other members of the public wish to speak? Come on, ma'am.
Hey, good morning, everybody. My name is Molly Knudsen. I live at 516 East 54th Street, which is 54th and Paulson. And I apologize. I'm a little nervous. This is my first time speaking at something, but I wanted to let y'all know that when my husband and I had the opportunity to move once his career changed. We specifically chose Savannah because of its walkability. We originally moved to downtown, and once we decided to buy, we chose Midtown Savannah specifically for its current walkability to Habersham Village and also the potential for more. Once we just had our first child 2 years ago, and one thing that's really important to us as new parents is encouraging our son to participate with the local community and to not be car dependent. We love walking with him, biking with him to local establishments. We frequently do it to the current Two Tides location. We actually bike all the time to the Waters Cafe. And I think that doing anything that promotes walkability and small businesses in a Savannah is a one way that we make Midtown and this area just a stronger town in general. I'm fully in support of this. It's such a blessing to live in a temperate climate year round where you don't have to be car dependent because of weather. We should be taking advantage of this in every opportunity. And I look forward to y'all passing this, and thank you for the time.
Thank you. Any other members of the public like to speak? Mrs. Massey, would you like to respond to public comment?
Excuse me, sir. I do hear one person online. The name is Mackenzie. I'm going to unmute.
Okay. Mackenzie, would you like to speak?
Yes, please. I would love to. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hi, everyone. My name is Mackenzie Fitzgerald. I live at 1605 Vine Street, which is a block and a half from this project. And I will say, when this project was announced, both my husband and I wrote letters of total support for this business. We are excited about bringing new business to this neighborhood, but I will say that our letters of support were in assumption that parking would be in the rear of the building. And I know that's a big assumption to make, but there is currently what would be, I would think, a parking spot back there. It's a little bit rough, but it looks paved. I have heard on this call that that is being saved for further development, but obviously didn't know that at the time. But I am elated by the idea of this business, just not at the expense of the residents who live on this street. And I'll tell you what I mean by that. Because I own my home, and many of the neighbors on the street also own their homes, but we're experiencing a little bit of trouble with this idea of the business without parking because many of us don't have driveways, so we rely on the street parking. I also do work from home all day, so I do see the traffic that comes down Vine Street, especially for the school. And I'll repeat what one of my neighbors said earlier, which is that it's a total nuisance. It's a huge pain. It starts at around 7 o'clock in the morning every day, and it goes for at least an hour. And then it happens again around 2:15 until 3:15. And because these cars take up the entire street on Vine Street and totally in front of my house, it's impossible to get your car in and out of here. And I do definitely feel for the project owners, Liz, and the rest of her team who are experiencing the pain that's brought on by the school. But please know that the residents of Vine Streets feel that impact so much more. And so introducing even less parking onto this street and movement is going to disturb this neighborhood quite a bit more. I only have one car, and I still sometimes struggle to find parking, especially when there's that traffic with the school. It's a huge pain. So I would like to pose back a question to Liz and her team, which is it possible to rent that space that's currently being saved right now for future development? Can it be paved and turned into parking lots? And the reason that I ask that is, projecting to future, if that rear spot is being saved for further development of business, then will we not end up back in this exact same spot for another business in the future, asking for more parking in this neighborhood that, again, will impact the neighbors here, and it will make parking for me and my family and the rest of my neighbors even more difficult. Thank you so much for letting me speak.
Thank you, ma'am. Is anyone else online? Sir, are you raising your hand? All right, one more.
Can't see y'all over this desk, but hey, I'm Chris Underwood. I live at the corner of Anderson and Barnard, and I've lived here in Savannah for 4 years now.
Hello, Mr. Underwood.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Thank you. And having come from Atlanta, which is so car dominated and so, just taken up by parking, Savannah is hope, right? Because I can get everywhere. And I think with an abundance of parking and, just being mindful of cars comes isolation. And with isolation comes a death of hope. So, I mean, that's all I have to say about that. So, I think a car is not a person and shouldn't be considered in any of this kind of thought. So thanks for letting me speak. Who do I give the microphone back to?
Thank you, Mr. Underwood. Mrs. Massey, would you like to respond to public comment?
Oh, there is one more person.
Oh, now we've got another one online. All right.
I'm so sorry. The name is Kelly. I'm going to unmute.
Kelly, are you there?
Can everyone hear me all right?
Yes, ma'am.
You can hear me now?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you, everybody. My name is Kelly Grieve. My family and I are transplants from Pennsylvania, and we own a residence since 2016 on the border of Thomas Square in Midtown. We're on 34th Street, and we are a three-person family. We also moved to Savannah for its walkability and its temperate climate. Two of us do not have regular access to a vehicle. My 17-year-old daughter and I receive a lot of food deliveries and are often on foot because of no vehicle the majority of the week. More and more Savannah establishments that have previously offered delivery have recently discontinued their delivery services, including seven establishments recently made themselves no longer available for delivery. Midtown Bagels, Friendship Coffee, Funky Brunch, Rhett, along with the Gray Market and Rise, who have shut down entirely. We feel the more walkable options in Midtown for food, the better, especially with the impact of tourism limiting easy access to and affordability of local restaurants. We are of the opinion that this increases the safety of the area as it will prompt revitalization and improvement of the surrounding communities. It is also a good resource for student population, including staff and parents, as well as a good resource for those with odd hours like my husband, who's a local carpenter of Union 256, wakes up at 4 or 5 a.m., gets home at 8 p.m. with limited access to food, local food establishments because of his hours. The Laundry Diner will be a welcome replacement for Fork and Dagger Diner, which we are losing this weekend, yet another loss as far as walkable food options and resources in our neighborhood. The Laundry Diner is a welcome addition to our neighborhood. We were really looking forward to becoming patrons of its new location, and we hope it will open in Midtown. Please do not take that away from us. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you. Is anyone else online?
No, sir. Not anymore.
Come on.
Morning. My name's Sonia Antonellis. I live in the area on 33rd Street, closer to Broad and the Perk Coffee. We also own a property on 32nd Street in between Polson and Harmon. I just wanted to note on the parking issue that the lady on Vine Street mentioned, not all the houses or most of the houses that I know on 32nd Street, potentially 33rd and 34th Street, do have off-street parking available to them, driveways. So I notice on 32nd Street that not a lot of people park on the street. They have a driveway. So perhaps that could be considered when surveying the area, just to actually take a note of who has ability to park off-street, so therefore visitors to the area would not be affecting them a lot. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. We're still clear online?
Yes, sir.
Everybody spoke that wants to speak. Okay. Mrs. Massey, would you like to respond to public comment?
Yes. Thank you. I mean, first of all, I just truly appreciate everyone that has shown up to speak today, even those who have shown up in opposition. I did mention when I posted about this meeting online that it's incredibly hard for me to not be there in person because I'm not the kind of business owner to not be just involved, you know, on the ground floor when it comes to these things. I think that, while, you know, I'm agree with my decision to apply for the variance, I 100% respect that this is a really tricky issue and does affect this neighborhood's quality of life, whether positively or just interrupting parking. I will say I'm from Austin, and before I moved to Savannah, I did work in a neighborhood that was going through a lot of growth very similarly as this. And one solution that I have been able to think of is something that those neighborhoods did, although it was another state and city, is that when businesses started opening up in an area that had not seen a lot of commercial traffic previously, they did start offering resident-only parking. That's something when I also lived in downtown Savannah, that was offered as well, where residents were able to apply for a resident tag for their cars, and then the city put up signage saying that certain blocks were only residential parking only in mixed-use areas. Like I said, I've applied and used that kind of parking in other cities, like where I'm from in Austin, and then also in Savannah when I lived downtown, and it was super beneficial. And so, you know, if this does pass and residents are concerned about parking, that is something that I think, you know, it would be something that could be a part of that larger discussion that a lot of people have been mentioning throughout this meeting. To answer some of the questions that were brought up when in opposition to the parking, unfortunately, I am in the situation where I am renting this building, and I do have I have no control over that back lot at all. If we did get to the point where I did have to rent more property to put in a parking lot, if I'm being honest with you, I'm not sure that that's in my budget and that I could afford to rent more space just for parking. So at this time, you know, that would require me to take a step back and have to evaluate if I could even move forward with this parking or with this project at all. So again, I truly appreciate every single person that has said something today, but at this time, I still do 100% stand by my request to apply for the variance because it is the only option, in my opinion, that will allow me to be successful as a business owner and allow me to provide the type of service that I'm looking to provide for this neighborhood.
Thank you very much. At this time, we're going to enter into board discussion.
I actually have a question for Mr. Morrow, if that's
all
right.
Yeah.
Were there any, I didn't see any letters of support or opposite. Were none received by the city?
There were quite a few letters.
Some, did I just miss it?
Quite a few letters of support that were received. They should be attached to the file agenda.
Oh, I see here. Sorry. All right. And the laundry mat, has this lot been vacant? Do you know how long it's been vacant for?
I do not know, actually.
Any other questions for staff?
Not for me.
No. All right, Mrs. Jarrett, I'm anxious to hear what you have to say.
I'm frustrated at the fact that when we originally approved this, there were only 8 parking spaces needed, and that there was an implication that those 8 parking spaces were available on the adjacent lot, and that was why it had the opportunity to move forward. I appreciate the fact that this is a great business opportunity. It is a local business. I think that's wonderful. I live really close to one of the Two Tides in the Thomas Square area, and I hate the fact that they are in this situation, and I think that I'll leave it at that.
Mr. Plunk, what would you like to say?
I would say Ms. Massey mentioned that she thinks there's 72. Mr. Morrow said he thinks substantially less, but of course they need substantially less. I mean, 13 is substantially less than 72. So even if it was, you know, half of that, that still suggests to me that there is substantial on-street parking available most of the time, other than it sounds like the times when Classical Academy are using it, which, as someone pointed out, are the times when, you know, this restaurant would least need it. I don't know how many people are going to be there having a beer at 7 a.m. Maybe I'm making an assumption there. But certainly, you know, anytime you look at the parking, it's always kind of the residential versus commercial side of things. You know, the business needs to stay open. It needs to have parking available to stay open, but that's the business's concern is getting people there. But the flip side is how it impacts the residents. But it seems like the only immediate resident on this block is extremely in support of it, and so I kind of defer to her as the resident there who knows that area best. She wants this and does not think it'll impact. So if there's no immediate residential concerns, obviously there may be, and I agree with Mr. Morrow that the theoretical best option is a text amendment. But I also understand Mr. Combs' point about, you know, that doesn't do anything for getting this business here immediately and all the, you know, positive contributions it's going to make to this area. I tend to be in support of this just because of the complete lack of concern from any, you know, of the immediate residents and the knowledge of how good this would be for this area, all the support we've seen here today. I think this is an area that's been pinpointed by the city as, you know, an area we want to promote growth and development and, you know, anything that blocks that, unnecessary parking regulations. And I think it's been vacant since the 70s. So I hate to, you know, I'm seeing some nods around here that that is the correct timeline, that it's been sitting there since the 70s. So waiting longer for a text amendment that we don't have any timeline for when that would occur. Those are my thoughts. Mr. Turner, do you have anything?
I'll just say I think that the spirit of what I believe the city is trying to move towards as far as our neighborhoods, especially in this area, is that we do want more walking and biking to our establishments. And to hear pretty resounding support from, I'd say, 99% of the community here that they won't be affected negatively by this, I think leans towards support of what they're trying to do.
I'll make a motion.
I'll hear a motion.
I motion that we accept, that we grant petitioner's request for the parking variance.
All right. Mr. Plunk has made a motion to grant the petitioner's request for a parking variance. Is there a second?
Second.
Second by Mr. Turner. Is there any discussion on the motion? All right. Hearing none, Mrs. Jarrett, how do you vote?
No.
Mr. Plunk?
Yes.
Mr. Turner?
Yes.
All right. The motion passes and the parking variance is approved. Next, we're going to hear the petition for an accessory structure height variance for 115 Dykes Drive, 23-004540. I believe this is an after-the-fact application.
Sorry, I'll just give a moment for everyone to
vacate
the room.
No. They already built the thing. They need the setbacks because it's too close to other property lines, but it's also taller than the primary structure. Yeah. I'm pretty sure. Yeah.
All right. So I hear a little bit of chatter. This is a petition that came before this board in October. For side setback variances, and it was noted during that meeting that the accessory structure that was already under construction was also taller than the principal residence. And so this is making a reappearance simply to address the request that the accessory structure be permitted to be taller than the principal residence. Again, this is located at 115 Dykes Drive, and here is a photo of the home from the front. And I'll scroll down so that you can see a photo of the actual accessory structure. It is proposed to be just a storage shed. It is not an ADU. And so the even though it's a second story, this second story is described better as more of an attic. It's accessible via an attic pulley type system where you would have stairs that extend down. And we are told by the petitioner that it is only for the purpose of storage. So with that, staff does recommend approval of this request for an after-the-fact variance to permit this accessory structure to be taller than the principal dwelling. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Mr. Morrow, are there any other accessory structures in the general vicinity that are taller than the primary structure?
That is a great question. It's something I would have to look at and get back to you on.
Okay. How much taller is it than the primary structure from ridge to ridge?
Perhaps we could get the petitioner here to answer that question.
Okay. Would the petitioner please come? Oh, excuse me. First, is there any questions for Mr. Morrow besides the ones I had? Not yet. Okay. Petitioner, please come forward.
Morning.
Morning.
My name is Jose Hernandez, and I'm the owner of the 115 Dutchess Drive. And I think it's over like a little over 2 feet.
2 feet. Okay. Do you have anything you'd like to say?
I'll say it's only we use for storage because the other storage already leaks everywhere and we don't have space to put in, so.
Okay. Any questions for the petitioner? Mr. Plunk, Mrs. Jarrett, do y'all have any questions?
I'm seeing if there was some kind of front view. So
and actually on the outside neighbors, we don't have any windows. All the windows is going to our property.
So I'm sorry, sir. I didn't understand you.
I said the windows we put in, it'd be going to the our property, no go out. So.
Okay.
Any? Is there a front view that we can look at to see if we can see this structure?
I will.
Talking about looking like that picture.
See from the street view.
Like a sight, a sight line.
The tree in the front yard kind of blocks it from the street view.
It is a heavily wooded area. So I'll take us there, but it may be difficult to. That is not doing what I thought it would. Drop in right here. Oh. Doesn't look like your house, actually. Is this your street?
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Is it this one?
Yeah.
This one right here. Okay, here we go. This house.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So this is from March 2022. We're actually not able to see it. Or is that's not it?
Yeah.
That's it. Oh, that's an open space. It looks like yellow. Mm-hmm. Okay.
It's nothing to see to
nothing
from
to see.
The street.
Okay.
And the construction, nobody. So I don't have complaint from no neighbor or nothing.
Okay. So the petitioner is saying that it's actually not visible from the street.
Mr. Mara, on your report, I think there's a picture of the front of the house.
Yes, there is.
And that would be after the structure was constructed, correct?
Yes, it is currently, yes.
And you can't see it in that picture.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but you see it's not can see it with the front. It's
from
not
the front.
In the back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have we gotten any feedback from the neighborhood?
No, staff has not received any letters either in support or opposition.
Any other questions for the petitioner or Mr. Morrow? Okay, thank you. Is there any members of the public that would like to speak concerning this petition? If you're online, use the raise your hand feature.
We don't have anyone, sir.
Okay. Thank you. Y'all can sit down. All right, we'll enter into board discussion. Mrs. Jared. What would you like to say?
I don't have any comments. Thank you.
Mr. Plunk?
No comment.
Mr. Condon?
Yes, sir.
Mr. Turner?
No comment.
Okay, before we entertain a motion, I would like to request that whoever makes the motion, let's make it in two parts, one for the height variance and one for the setback variances.
I motion what he said.
I'm sorry.
I second his motion.
Mr. Chair, so actually the setback variances were approved by this board at its original appearance.
I kind of thought they were, but it didn't, from reading the current report, it sounded like we're still looking at both.
No, this is just an amended report in essence to address that one outstanding.
I understand
variance.
Now. So we're just considering the height variance.
That is correct.
I'll motion that we grant the request for a height variance.
I second.
All right. Mr. Plunk has made a motion to grant the height variance. It's been seconded by Mrs. Jarrett. Is there any discussion on the motion? All right, hearing none. Mrs. Jarrett, how do you vote?
Yes.
Mr. Plunk?
Yes.
Mr. Condon?
Yes.
Mr. Turner?
Yes.
Okay, the motion passes and the variance is approved. Next, we're going to hear parking variance, Mrs. Jarrett, for 111 Ann Street, 23-005992. Y'all are okay. You can leave now if you want to.
Merry Christmas, everybody.
You too.
All right. Mr. Chair, members of the board, the request in front of you is in essence a request to amend a previously granted variance for a reduction in parking at 111 Ann Street. And so this particular matter came before this board just prior to the adoption of NUZO. And so during its original conception, it was analyzed within the context of the original zoning ordinance. And so now the petitioner is bringing this back for reconsideration under the development standards of NUZO. Right. So the subject parcel is zoned downtown expansion. At the time, I believe it was a community business. And so it is a 232 dwelling mixed use project. It contains 232 residential units as well as retail uses, offices, art studios, and a gym. This has also received a look from the historic board, the downtown historic board, and it was issued a COA. So in terms of its appearance, it also had a look from another board. And with regard to parking in particular, in April of 2019, a 107 space parking variance from the then parking requirements, which was 266 off-street spaces, were granted by the ZBA. And so in bringing this back to look at the requirements of NUZO, this table was provided by the petitioner in order to kind of summarize the uses. And so we can see under NUZO, at a required ratio of 232 spaces, 1:1 for residential uses, there's 1,222 square feet of office general. There's 1,258 square feet of retail space, 3,615 square feet of art, photo studio, and gallery space, and then there's 3,305 square feet of fitness space. Taking advantage of bike and moped reductions, that brings the total number of required spaces to, again, 232. 157 of those spaces are proposed to be provided off-site. And 75, a reduction of 75 spaces is requested from this board today. The basis for this request is that there are approximately 2,400 public spaces that are available within 1,300 feet of this development, in addition to several bus lines that provide access to this site. Also interesting is that this was granted in association with, in essence, a managed or valet parking arrangement. And so at least some of these spaces are in a tandem configuration, meaning that if you're in your driveway at home, you know, two vehicles in the driveway would be parked such that one would need to be moved before the other one could go. So at least part of these parking spaces are in that configuration with the assumption that a valet or parking manager would be moving vehicles. And so that was an interesting part of this initial request. Nonetheless, as the zoning ordinance does not take into account availability of nearby off-street spaces, staff recommended denial of the original variance request, and staff continues to recommend denial of this request for a 75 space reduction in the off-street parking requirement. With that, I'm happy to answer any questions.
Any questions for Mr. Morrow?
Does anyone ever pursue shared parking anymore?
They do. Honestly, they do.
They didn't in this one, though.
They did not. Thank you. I understand.
Any other questions for Mr. Morrow? All right, Mr. Yellen, if you will.
Yes, sir, Mr. Chair. Josh Yellen here today on behalf of the applicant, which is Ann Street property owner, who has developed this site as a 232-unit multifamily mixed-use complex. I do want to pull this up very quickly just to show some background, but also need to share some background about this project, about this site, and about the parking variance requested, because on its face, it looks like we're asking for something very massive and that the request that was approved by this board in 2019 was massive. That was not necessarily the case. In 2019, we had been waiting for NUZO to pass for 5 years, 10 years, 15 years. What we did in 2019 was we came in and said, hey, ZBA, can you apply the NUZO standards? Y'all have vetted them for 20 years. We know that if it's adopted, this is what the standards are going to be. Can we just get a jump start on it? Can we come in and apply NUZO to this site? And that's what was approved, was taking the NUZO standards and putting them on this site. The unfortunate problem was when the motion was made at ZBA to approve of the NUZO standards, it was made with a requirement that we provide a standard amount of valet parking to make up the deficit. That current requirement of having the valet parking is what's proving to be unworkable. There are not enough tenants in the building to dictate valet parking. The residents don't like the valet parking, and we think that the 156 spaces, so we have 156 spaces ready to go on site, and we believe that is sufficient for the area. To Ms. Jarrett's point about the shared parking arrangement, part of today's request, if we are able to remove that valet parking requirement, is so that we can explore shared parking, because currently we are not allowed to do that. We are required to have valet parking to make up the difference. And so we believe that the 156 spaces is both appropriate, but we also need that valet parking to be lifted. So it was a two-part request in our application for a variance here. Like the project that we were talking about before, all of these parking requirements in the city of Savannah are interesting. They are unique, and it's almost a tale of two cities and how we treat parking. What's unique about this site is that we are located right here. If we were located 5 feet to the east, we would have zero parking for this building. There would not be a parking requirement for any of the commercial uses or for any of the residential uses, simply because someone put a line down the middle of Ann Street that said, west of Ann Street, parking, east of Ann Street, no parking. Furthermore, despite this being our downtown core, multifamily units in this area have the exact same parking requirement as if we were being built in New Hampstead, if we were being built on Abercorn. We have a suburban parking requirement for a downtown multifamily project. And what's unique about this site, despite somehow not being in the exempt area, we are actually the closest multifamily development in the city of Savannah to the CAT bus depot. There is no site in the city that has more access to public transportation than this site. So properties further to the east in the heart of downtown, no parking despite not having robust access to public transportation. Here, all of the residents overlook the CAT bus depot and are not getting the same benefit for parking. The owners of this property have actually studied parking. They have other projects. They know what the leasing rates are. Typically, no more than 70% of applicants who are coming into Savannah or are renting even bring a car with them. And that number is in line with the 156 spaces that we have on site. And so while we are requesting that the valet parking requirement be removed, we do believe that the request for the variance, the 75 space variance, to permit 156, 157 spaces is permitted. We are not saying we want to eliminate parking, as could be done at an adjacent site. We are saying that we believe that 156 parking spaces are sufficient for this site. We know the area. We know the location next to CAT buses. We know that there are SCAD buses. We know that if we were 5 feet away, we would be parking exempt. And we know, as Mr. Morrow mentioned, there are over 2,400 public parking spaces in the area. And that doesn't even count the excess parking spaces that all of the new hotel parking garages have had in recent years. So we think there is robust parking in the area. We think that the valet parking requirement at a minimum should be eliminated so that we could pursue alternative parking arrangements. But we also believe that this reduction is warranted. We understand that it on paper appears like a large ask, but we're also here to have this conversation with y'all, that if 75 spaces is too big of an ask and you think 20 spaces is fine, we need to figure this out, because as was mentioned in the prior hearing, every parking space, even though they're on site, if we have to go out and find additional parking spaces, that obviously adds additional cost that frankly increases rent. There's no, you know, easy way to say that. We are trying to keep our costs low. We have the project as built. We know it's a great project. People are not bringing their cars with them. And so we do respectfully think that this request is warranted and necessary, but I don't want to imply that it's an all or nothing approach for y'all. And I'm happy to have that conversation and dialogue with y'all today. But I do believe that the 75 space variance is warranted, and happy to answer any questions that y'all may have.
So it's not, like you were saying, this is more about getting rid of the valet parking requirement because nobody's using it.
So currently, as Mr. Morrow mentioned, the site is required to park 232 spaces. When you do a valet parking plan with the city of Savannah, you can basically take the parking area, and for better, it's a blank slate. You can let people jigsaw puzzle their spaces. With that jigsaw puzzle, this site is currently fully parked with 232 spaces. The problem being is that the valet parking doesn't work. There are not enough tenants with a car for the property to afford to hire someone 24 hours a day, 7 days a week to be moving five cars around. People are not bringing their cars to this location. So what we were asking for is to remove that valet parking requirement. And if it's removed instantly, we have 156 spaces currently on site that could be parked. So that's where the difference in the numbers was. The 232 is what's required under the ordinance. If valet parking is removed, we're at 156 or 157. And so it was that 75 space variance, which would eliminate the need for the alternative parking plan. But if y'all are willing to eliminate the valet parking requirement, I wanted to have that discussion as to the 75 spaces, because obviously any reduction is helpful for them not to have to go lease spaces from a hotel.
So this is a financial request.
This is not purely a financial request. It's a need request from the people who are coming in that it is empty parking. It is there.
So
the hardship imposed, I mean, if we're going down that road, is that all of the sites immediately adjacent are parking exempt.
Understood. But your client purchased property in an area that was not exempt.
Correct. Yes. Based on market conditions, though, I mean, we do believe that at least as it is in a downtown urban environment that we are seeing, that the one-to-one parking ratio of one parking space per unit is grossly out of tune with what people are actually doing, that people are not bringing their cars in this area, maybe in other areas of the city.
So yes. You would propose that a new study be done for parking in the downtown area?
Personally, yes.
Pay for it?
Would I pay for it? Absolutely not. But I do think, yes, that what we are seeing, though, and, you know, obviously we have represented a lot of multifamily developers in the downtown area, and we are seeing this come up pretty frequently, that a lot of the parking is going underutilized, and not everyone wants to come in and necessarily open that up to the public. That obviously that has costs as well. I know that this is sunk cost at this point, but you know, there are studies about how each parking space costs $26,000.
Would you be willing to go out and look for your shared parking spaces and come back and let us know whether you can find them before we?
I think, I mean, ultimately,
if we remove the valet requirement, well, today's.
No, before we remove.
I would say, in my opinion, I think that the variance is warranted regardless. That I think 75 space reduction at this area puts it exactly in line with what we are seeing the residents
and
demand.
And Ms. Massey thought that her 13 spaces were not necessary.
Correct.
I want to clarify. So the board, the options available to the board, deny it outright, as staff has recommended, and say no, good luck. We could grant the, you know, grant them 75, you say, do as you will, or we could remove the requirement that it be valet, but not grant them a variance for them, which would then allow them to go. They would still need to find 75 spots somewhere, but it would give them more options.
With a condition, yes.
Right. So. Or remove one of the conditions that was granted. So they would no longer have a variance. They would not have a variance for those 75 spots. They would not be required to do valet. So they could go find like shared parking or lease.
Yeah, probably have to keep the valet until they found the shared parking.
Yeah, the removal of the valet spaces with the condition that they be made up. With
right, because we're not granting them a variance for those 75.
Right.
Is this correct?
That's correct.
Okay. Okay. All right. How long have y'all been open for?
They are not very long.
Okay.
How full is it?
Empty.
The building is empty?
No,
the parking lot. I want to
see. How much vacancy?
The building, yeah. Yes.
Not very full currently. And that's part of the impetus for us being here, obviously, is that as they were looking at the valet parking requirement for full transparency, it truly is not making sense based upon.
But when the building filled up, there's a possibility that you might need those space.
Yeah, if you had more rental, could you know percentage of the vacancy right now as far as the
I do
not the commercial side, but the residential side?
No, I do not currently. I know that it is less than 156, which is how we found ourselves in this position, that from working with the city on trying to work through the alternative parking, as Ms. Jarrett discussed, we've had these conversations with the city and parking services and traffic as to, do we need this valet parking if we haven't hit that delta of lease ups? And currently everything is saying no. We hope to hit that number in terms of leases, but just because the leases are coming in, we are not seeing the flip side of people requesting as much cars to come on site as well.
I'd just like to ask a clarifying question. If the spaces are currently oriented as tandem parking for valet purposes, how will people get their car out if there's a stranger's car in front of their car?
No, everything was going to be – so that's not the current plan. Everything would be restriped if the valet parking is removed.
If I may, one more question. So that restriping seems like would entail drive aisles in between some of those spaces. So you're confident that you would still be able to attain the same number of spaces, even including those drive aisles?
Yes. And so I believe the information that I sent you and Edward with the total parking being 156, that is the proposal if the valet parking is eliminated. So that was done by the project architect from LS3P who did that. So I'm confident that they actually looked at the numbers and put in realistic spaces.
So just to make sure it's clear in my head, following Ms. Jarrett's proposal or question, if we were today to waive the requirement for the valet, and then ask you to go back, you know, and do a little homework as Ms. Jarrett has requested, what would that do for you in the short term?
It might jeopardize our ability to get a certificate of occupancy as opposed to a TCO, because I'm not sure how the city will respond if we lift the valet. Well, I'm going to try and play this out as quickly as I can in my head. If we lift the valet parking requirement, we will have 156 spaces on site. But that 156 spaces is not currently compliant with the zoning ordinance. So therefore, I'm not sure City of Savannah would give us a full certificate of occupancy and final walkthrough because we have not met the requirements of the ordinance. And so while I appreciate being able to do that, I'm not sure, you know, we may end up having to go do that alternative parking arrangement. I'm just not sure making it a requirement. I think making it a requirement here only makes it more difficult for the project to commence. We know we need to find the spaces if the variance is not approved. We are hopeful that the valet parking can be eliminated and a variance can be added on top of that. But understanding that there are alternative parking arrangements that we would need to pursue otherwise.
But the way it stands right now with the valet parking, that and you want to get rid of it because the folks don't like it and all, it meets the ordinance where you could get your CO. Is that correct?
Correct. We are current, but the valet parking has not been in operation yet. We have been thankfully working with the city because we have not hit enough cars to necessitate having a full-time valet operator. We are trying to be proactive in anticipating that, yes, one day that number will be reached. We still do not believe that the valet parking is a good long-term solution just because of the costs and the burden that is added to that. So we are asking that at a minimum, the valet parking be eliminated, so that we can go out if necessary to go look at all of the garages in the area, all of the excess surface parking in the area, to go out and find an alternative parking arrangement so that if the variance is not approved to reduce the parking, that we are going to be parking compliant. I will say to the initial question again for the alternative parking plans, I might be the only person who has successfully gone through an alternative parking plan process. It is difficult, to say the least. And it is a 8-month process. Not to say we won't have to do it, but the reason why we're not seeing it more frequently is, I think the ordinance probably needs some tweaks that just were unanticipated, but you know, we have been trying to get through that process.
The ordinance for the shared parking?
Yes, ma'am.
All right. Well, that's certainly something that can be looked at.
Just to, unless I'm not thinking about this logically, it seems the most logical solution in order not to jeopardize obtaining the CO would be to get the CO now and then after you have it, get the variance, because you risk getting a variance that puts a requirement on you finding the other spaces that you might not be able to meet.
No, and I think that's a fair point. I mean, our baseline request is to eliminate the valet parking requirement, which still puts us in the same situation. We need to be parking compliant. It's the baseline for the reasons that have been stated. The baseline for eliminating the valet was kind of our first and foremost concern, because it is a requirement from the 2019 ZBA variance, which I think was an unanticipated consequence. We thought we were coming in, get the benefits of NUZO, but now it fully states you must have valet parking under that ZBA ordinance. So we are not able to go out and start doing these alternative parking arrangements, not able to talk to the city about, you know, payment in lieu of parking. Because under the ordinance, there's an alternative parking. You can do remote parking. You can do shared parking. In certain areas, you can do payment in lieu of parking.
You can't do a conditional discussion with the city, or?
We've had those discussions, and that's kind of why we're here. Currently, the valet parking was a requirement from this board. And so that was our request, was if we could eliminate the valet, if y'all want to entertain the variance, obviously we'd love that, or have a discussion about a reduction in the parking. But first and foremost, it's trying to make sure that we can actually continue to take advantage of the other mechanisms within NUZO that we're currently severely limited by.
Any other questions for petitioner? Okay, go ahead and ask. Mr. Morrow, Mr. Condon has a question for you.
I apologize, and I'm not trying to muddy the waters here. I'm trying to clarify in my own mind.
Absolutely.
So the way that the findings are written, apparently I'm confused here, that back in April, and I was here for this, there was a 107 space reduction approved.
That is correct.
That number is off the required 232 based on one per dwelling unit, or was the number significantly higher than 232 to begin with?
So the original off-street parking requirement at the time that this came through was 266 under the previous zoning. So this reflects a reassessment under NUZO, as well as benefits built into NUZO for additional reductions to vehicle spaces required based on additional bicycle and moped.
So if we subtract from the two, I apologize, you said 266.
That was assessed to be the requirement at the time. Yes, sir.
So if we subtract from the 266, the 107,
59.
That's 159. Are we looking to take 75 spaces off of 159? Or I'm a little confused as to the requirement is 157.
So based on the table that you can see here, this is kind of an enumeration of all the list, all the uses that are included here. Mm-hmm. And each of those with their vehicle requirement adds up to 254. And so the bike and moped,
Let's bring them down to 232.
Brings it down to 232.
Right.
And so provided vehicle spaces actually is 157. So the reduction in essence would truthfully be off of the requirement of 254. That really is the baseline. We're making the assumption they're going to provide.
So back in April of 2019, we approved 107 spaces, which would give them 107 off of 232. Why would we need a variance today?
Well, it's not the... Okay. All right. I'll let Josh.
No, and I will say it was a confusing...
I'm sorry, Josh. I'm not trying to make the thing more confusing. I'm trying to...
Good question.
It was a... I have the staff report from 2019, but I thought I had it on the screen, but it is not. In 2019...
That's the wrong one.
In 2019, the request that was made was based upon... We had the old zoning standards, and we came in and said, can we apply NUZO? The response was, yes, but you must park it as a valet. And so the two levels of parking are currently in existence, but we have a requirement that basically one of them, they gave us the 107 space reduction, but said that
based on part of those being used by a valet.
But in terms of why we're fearful of these contingency requirements, it was made contingent upon providing 107 spaces of valet parking. So in essence, we didn't really get a parking reduction in 2019, we got the ability to use valet parking.
All right.
107 spaces total for the building?
No, ma'am. There's stripe parking and there's valet parking, but the request was made from ZBA that we will give you 107 spaces, but you're going to have to park them all on site as valet parking. It took nothing off the top.
So if we waive the valet, really, you don't have 107 reduction. That's why you today need the 75.
Correct.
Because the 107 flies out the window.
Correct.
The light dawns over Marblehead here.
Yes.
Thank you very much.
And that's why we're asking if the 75 spaces were granted, that takes us to parking compliant. If the valet is removed, but that also allows us to go explore the other avenues to find parking.
Okay. Any other questions?
I was just going to say that there's kind of a net to gross effect in essence. So as Josh was describing, the ability to configure, once you add in the drive aisles and all the other circulation and stuff that's necessary, that's kind of your gross area. I think that's kind of where we're caught up. So even myself in understanding this, once you account for all of that stuff, you come out with the 157. So it's that gross to net effect of this is what we actually have in regular parking versus valet, if that makes sense.
Any other questions for the staff or for the petitioner? Anybody, members of the public, like to speak? Okay. Anybody online?
No, sir.
Well, Mrs. Jarrett, we'll start with you.
I think you know how I feel.
I do.
No, but I'd like to have honesty on this particular issue because I respect her.
I'd also like to know, I guess, real quick, did we get any letters of support or opposition?
Staff did receive one letter of support. It is attached to the agenda.
That was the only one. That one I saw on there was the one.
Yes, sir.
For me. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Mrs. Jarrett.
My position is that we need to use shared parking more. And until we have a planning study that says that doing away with more parking works, I'm not comfortable with doing away with more parking.
Right. Mr. Plunk.
I agree, definitely the point's well taken that we need both the ordinance for shared parking maybe needs to be looked at,
yes,
as was Mr. Yellen's point, and maybe the entire parking study for the downtown expansion zoning area, because clearly, as Mr. Yellen said, we keep, and that's one of the areas we keep hearing parking issues going over and over, so there's clearly something
on
the ground is not matching the zoning requirements in that area. You know, our board doesn't have the authority to demand a study be done, but, you know, maybe NPC does, but we need the chairman of NPC. and possibly, you know, there can be industry, you know, support for that study, maybe, you know, a partial cost.
Citizen input.
Yeah, exactly. I'm very open to removing the zoning, removing the valet requirement, which would allow them to go out and try and find, because they would still have to come back before us if they didn't find an option. I mean, it would not necessarily remove it. We're not removing anything. We're just letting them kind of go free and say, okay, ballet didn't work. Can you find something better? If not, you know, we still have the ability to say, no, sorry, we can't do this. So at the minimum, I'm certainly open to letting them explore these other options. Because Mr. Yellen says he's the only one who's ever successfully done the alternative parking arrangement. So maybe we let him have a second crack at it since he's the expert in the city. I don't know. Mr. Conan, what do you think?
My feeling really has so much to do with let's not hurt these guys, right? Let's get a little feedback from Josh as to whether or not we'd actually be helping them today, or if we should push this down the road a little bit, you know, give them a month to make some inquiries. But I always fall back to my fairness doctrine. You know, way back when this was approved, it was acknowledged that there was insufficient parking going to be provided, and I was there at the time, so I vaguely remember this. I'm old now, so the memory is slightly foggy, but I do remember it. And so what I'm fearful of is that we've given these guys an opportunity to build this fantastic development, and the potential exists now that what was a good idea in 2019, because we've since had COVID and people have changed their lifestyles and the way things, you know, go. And, you know, so many people here are, I mean, myself included. I live downtown because I want to walk to things. I don't want to park my car. I don't want to get in the car, right? Or if I do, even when I go to the hockey games, there's a perfectly good parking lot over there. Yet I give my $12 to my Uber driver each way, because I think that's, you know, that's the lifestyle that I want. So my question, I'm going to ask another question of you, Josh. Are we helping you today by, if we go down the path of releasing you from the obligation of the valet, or are we hurting you? And if we're hurting you, would we be better off to give you 30 days or, you know, till the next meeting, right, to come up with some options and so on? Because it's a significant number here. Yes. It's not a small number. And I think Ms. Jarrett, as usual, has some great ideas, as does Mr. Plunk. You know, Mr. Turner has great ideas too yet, but I haven't given him a chance to talk. What would happen if we did this particular waiver for you?
No, understood. And so to directly address the question, releasing the valet parking requirement would absolutely assist in us being able to go out and explore those other options. We know that we have, if we're not back here, whether y'all make it a condition or not, and that's the part that I want to relay, we have to be parking compliant at the end of the day, or else code enforcement in the city of Savannah is going to take away our certificate of occupancy. Whether you make that a requirement here or not, that's the reality. So getting the valet parking requirement is a benefit so that we can go and explore the other options. If we cannot make those other options work, whether you say you have to come back here or not, we'll be back here if those options don't work. So I don't think that needs to be a requirement that we come back. We know that if the valet is removed, we need to start making phone calls and trying to figure out where we can go. And that was the intent of today's request. We said, let's lift the valet parking requirement. I still personally believe that the 75 space reduction is warranted based upon the area, but understand the sentiment that is being expressed about one step at a time.
The other point of doubt that remains in my mind, and maybe Ms. Jarrett's as well, is when you first gave your presentation, I was immediately very sympathetic that, you know, we had kind of a theoretical idea in 2019, this board did, imposed upon you. You've opened now and found it impractical. But then you said you have not been open very long at all, and that the apartments are still not even close to being full. So my worry is, has it maybe just, could the valet potentially work if you get to 100% tenant occupancy?
I don't believe so. Okay. And I think that's the concern that's being relayed to me, is that it is not going to be a good, it's not going to be a good system here. Okay. That we thought it was going to work. But even, I mean, if you can imagine the logistics of it, if there's one valet parking attendant for 232 units.
And additional units filled would not help it work. Correct. The issues with it are not.
Correct. It's, okay. It's multifaceted, the request to eliminate the valet parking. We thought it'd be feasible. It's just for many reasons, not a good idea.
How long has it been open?
I want to say that it has been opened since the summer. The way these apartment projects work, from day one, you've been accepting pre-leasings for a year in advance. And so they had a, you know, day one, you have a big group of people that come in. And as it's been ramping up, those people who have been coming in are not bringing cars. We are obviously optimistic that it will be fully leased soon, but it's a combination of the ramp has been slow and the people coming in are not bringing cars with them.
Do you think this speaks to the housing shortage or perhaps maybe a less than impactful housing shortage?
That would be a good question. Maybe not for this board, but I think it's a good question. But we're seeing it mixed throughout every apartment development across the city. Some at higher price points are fully leased. Some at lower price points are sitting vacant. That is where I don't know the answer of what a tenant is looking for in 2023 and what needs to be provided. I don't think that based upon this project that it's anything about the unit or the pricing or the location even. I wouldn't want to hypothesize about that.
Mr. Turner, do you have anything you'd like to say?
I think you've answered it. I'm thinking that the appropriate, I guess, course of action for our board would be the removal of the valet requirement, but denial of the 75 space park.
Or push it off.
And I appreciate that sentiment. If the variance is denied in that standpoint, we can't come back for a variance. Right.
Okay. Cool. Why don't you make a motion and we'll discuss the motion. Yeah.
I make a motion that we allow for the removal of the valet parking requirement and continue the portion for the 75 parking space reduction.
Okay, Mr. Condon has made a motion to approve the request to remove the valet parking requirement, and his motion also is to continue to the request for the removal of the 75 spaces.
Could we get a date certain to come back and reassess?
Continue it until
how much time would you like? I'm hopeful we could have it resolved, but if we did, it's 3 months too long.
Okay. The March meeting?
Yes.
All right. So Mr. Condon's motion is to remove the valet parking requirement and continue the request about the 75 parking spaces until our March meeting.
It's solved. You could just withdraw before March.
Yeah. Is there a second to the motion?
Second.
Second by Mr. Turner. Is there any discussion on the motion? Keep in mind you can amend the motion or make a motion to amend the motion or.
I'm ready.
Any discussion? Okay, then. Mrs. Jarrett, how do you vote?
Yes.
Mr. Plunk?
Yes.
Mr. Condon?
Yes.
Mr. Turner?
Yes.
All right. The motion passes. And I believe that's it.
I actually have a motion. I know we do this occasionally, and I don't know if it goes anywhere, but I'd like to make a motion that we submit a request to the appropriate sources that we look at the ordinance for shared parking, that we make a recommendation to reexamine the shared parking ordinance and also recommend a parking study for the downtown expansion zoning region.
Okay. Mr. Plunk has made a motion to
I have a comment.
Okay. Well, first, Mr. Plunk's made a motion to, you got to say all that again.
The thing I just said. I would like to make a motion that we recommend, to the appropriate board or sort, and we may have an amendment here from a smarter person than me, that the ordinance for shared parking be examined, and a study be done of the downtown expansion zoning region, a parking study.
Second it.
Okay.
Second.
Mr. Plunk has made a motion to, for us to alert the proper authorities, to, that we would like for them to do
a parking study
for the downtown expansion zone.
And recommend an examination, a review for the shared parking ordinance.
And a review for the shared parking ordinance. And Mrs. Jarrett has seconded that motion. Is there any discussion? Mr. Condon, I thought I heard you say. Okay.
She has something to add, I believe.
All right, so Mr. Condon seconded that motion. Is there any discussion on the motion, Mrs. Jarrett?
My concern is the funding for a study like that. I don't think it's in our budget to do a parking study. I don't know how involved looking at the ordinance would be, but clearly we don't have the ability to change the ordinance. We could make a recommendation to council to change the ordinance, but we don't have the ability to change the ordinance.
I think a study of how many requests for parking variance come before this board might suggest that there needs to be some kind of changing in the ordinance.
Understood, but if you don't have the money to do it, how do you get it accomplished? I know you can go to the city and ask the city for money, but...
If I could, a point of clarification. We're saying a parking study for the DX zoning district specifically, or is this with regard to, I guess I have to look and see if the yellow area for the parking reduction aligns directly with, the extents of DX. So just to understand, is this with specific regard to kind of the vicinity in the downtown area or the DX zone specifically?
I thought they were
one and the same. Okay. All right. Understood. We'll look at both. Okay.
Well, the other thing is if we're going to do a parking study for the DX zone, why don't we do a parking study for the Midtown zone? More money, clearly. But that, parking definitely seems to be, maybe we need to put a request through to the parking czar. Who's the guy that does? Yes. So maybe our board could request that he look at parking. We'll pass the buck.
I would be amenable to a friendly amendment to my motion from Mrs. Jarrett.
To beat what she just said.
Understood by Steve.
Good luck on weeding that out, Miss Mary. So I'd need to reiterate this motion so we can vote on it. So Mr. Plunk has made the motion to ask the appropriate board for a restudy of the downtown. What's that?
It sounds like we're kind of expanding it to a generalized parking study.
A citywide parking study and possibly based on how many parking variance requests come here. It's been seconded by Mr. Condon.
Secondly, in addition to that, also the shared parking ordinance is also.
And a restudy of the shared parking ordinance as well. Mrs. Jarrett, how do you vote on the motion to alert the authorities to these things?
Yes.
Okay, Mr. Plunk?
Yes.
Mr. Condon?
Yes.
Mr. Turner?
Yes.
Sorry for the confusion.
Is there any further business y'all want to talk about?
Could I throw a note out there? So The Reverend Dr. Jones is not with us today, but I will say that she has reiterated on two previous occasions a similar request for transportation and parking along the Bull Street corridor, given all of the developments that we're seeing in that area. So this is in line with that.
Well, the apartments that are coming into town are definitely, I mean, if you increase housing, you've got to look at parking.
Absolutely. But also just kind of a broader conversation. Mr. Combs was here earlier. We do have conversation regularly about the fact that I think it's important that neighborhoods pursue plans. And so since we have dedicated neighborhood associations, I think it's more than appropriate if we have neighborhoods that are going to meet and talk about concerns, the basis of those discussions should be a neighborhood plan. And so I think that this planning at that level, when something comes into this body, we can then say we have an established body of people whose opinions about this neighborhood we respect. This is their intention. And so I think there's a process and there's some resources that have been shared, but to kind of push out to the neighborhood groups, planning within your boundaries, and having something on paper that this board can make a recommendation on, then forward that to city council and say, we respect this. This is in accordance with planning at all levels, and we will evaluate future developments pursuant to, you know, fulfillment of the plans that you all have established.
Are we asking them to do the planning, or are we asking them to ask us to do the planning?
Well, and that's a conversation that can be had ongoing, but equipping people to do these things themselves, absolutely. Staff is willing to provide, there are a number of sources, resources that are available online currently to facilitate kind of grassroots planning approaches. So they are there. We can facilitate. This is something that needs to happen, whether or not it's formally, you know, pushed out, or if it's just a discussion like, hey, you guys are meeting. This is the way that you say, no, we're okay with this within our area, so that it's not, you know, just staff or a particular, you know, ZBA member or even an NPC member or something.
Isn't that what they did with the hotel overlay?
It is. It was a special interest area where a group came together and everyone got to weigh in. And so, you know, certain neighborhoods are comfortable with on-street parking and they want to encourage walkability. And so to then kind of take this idea that everyone else kind of wants the same thing, there are a number of things that are under tension here. What we are seeing is a savanna for Savannans and at the same time a savanna for tourists. And I think that both have to be considered. And so having the neighborhoods come forward and say, we've done more than complain, we've produced a document. You know, a plan ultimately is a thing on
parking
paper.
Parking overlay district plan. Well, in most communities, that is kind of, I mean, the zoning board works off of some kind of master plan or maybe individualized neighborhood master plans, which has unfortunately never really been the case here. That we're kind of unique in that regard. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yeah. Yes. So we maintain the kind of the broader plan that involves interaction of jurisdictions, but not necessarily at the neighborhood level. And so within the city, again, not to attempt to push more work on anyone, but just in the interest of seeing people not walk away from this process and this place dissatisfied that perhaps they have not been heard, when you come forward with a plan document, then you can say, no, we've voiced it. It's based upon, you know, academic principles and, you know, reasonable practice that we are able to implement these things, make zoning work for us so that within our district, we're able to get what we actually aspire for our neighborhood to look
like. And the lack of the lack of that kind of plan results in spot zoning like we were forced to do today for the Two Tides. I mean, that's the result of not having those kind of master plans. And ideally, we would avoid spot zoning like
right.
that if we had these. Right. And precedent. And you know. Yeah. Well, and Mr. Condon made a great point about we had a zoning policy that came into place in 2019, and then the world fundamentally changed the next year. And maybe, you know, things are very different in 2024 than they were in 2019. So.
Point well taken.
Absolutely.
Okay. Thank you. All right. Well, yep. The meeting adjourned.